grass is very, it's dead. So it's very susceptible to ignitions.
Fire Risk has state forestry officials urging people to be careful when they burn debris. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, lawmakers from both sides of the aisle are upset with a Valley legislator over his claim that rural Alaska women are delaying abortions to get free travel.
Most of the women who live in the villages that I represent are Alaska Native, and they feel like these comments were directed towards them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska House members are demanding Representative David Eastman apologize for saying some women are glad to become pregnant so they can receive Medicaid-funded travel to have abortions. So far, he's declined. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Representative Eastman hasn't backed down from comments he made earlier this week. The Wasilla Republican said there are individuals who are in villages and are glad to be pregnant so that they can have an abortion because there's a free trip to Anchorage involved. Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster joined with three other rural representatives, Speaker Bryce Edgman of Dillingham, Dean Westlake of Kotzebue, and Zach Fansler of Bethel, in demanding Eastman apologize. Foster said on the House floor Friday that he, his constituents, and people across Alaska are shocked.
It shocks the conscience to think that a female in a village would want to endure the physical and the emotional pain of getting an abortion just so that they can get a free trip to Anchorage. Most of the women who live in the villages that I represent are Alaska Native, and they feel like these comments were directed towards them.
Many of Foster's fellow representatives signaled their support by thumping on their desks. Eastman spoke after Foster. He didn't apologize. He did call for legislative hearings on Medicaid funding for travel for abortions.
I would ask, because of the interest in this issue, because of confusion, certainly because of media reports which have not allayed that confusion, that rather than taking the word of my constituents or my word, that we have a hearing to delve into how our funds are currently being used.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Garen Tarr then spoke, raising the issue of censuring Eastman.
This is not a topic I would bring up lightly, and it is something that we should all take very seriously. But there have been comments that continue to be made that are so deeply offensive, racist in nature, and misogynistic that I think that this body should consider censuring one of our members.
The last time a lawmaker was censured was in the early 1990s, when the Senate censured Democrat George Jocko for a series of ethics law violations. Eastman's comments have received criticism from both parties, including from Minority Leader Charisse Millett on Thursday.
That statement was incredibly hurtful. It was very hurtful. That's not the feeling that we have in our caucus. That's not a caucus position. I hope that Representative Eastman has some time to reflect on his comments.
The House majority has asked attorneys to research the censure process. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The person overseeing the Alaska Marine Highway System is leaving his post. Captain Mike Neusel submitted his resignation Thursday. Ferry spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says his boss, Transportation Commissioner Mark Lukin, accepted.
He's a wonderful employee, a great person to work with, and he'll leave a huge void at the Marine Highway System. So this is not an easy announcement or easy news to share at all. We're really sad to see him go.
His last day on the job will be Friday, May 12th. Neusel has been a Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner for a little more than 2 years. He also ran the ferry system in 2011 and 12. He wasn't immediately available for comment. Bailey says an interim ferry chief has not been named. Robert Venables chairs the state's Marine Transportation Advisory Board, which monitors the ferry system. He says Neusel will be missed.
He obviously had a firm grip on what was happening, and he ran the operation as well as I think one could expect under the circumstances.
Newsel is a retired U.S. Coast Guard captain. He left that post in 2010 after 30 years of service. Spring green-up is just beginning, and with temperatures rising and little rainfall across much of the state, fire season is here.
So right now, the grass is it's dead, so it's very susceptible to ignitions.
That's Bureau of Land Management Alaska Fire Service spokesperson Beth Ipson. She says the areas of greatest concern currently are not in the middle of nowhere, but rather the places where people live.
At this time of the year, we have more human starts because we don't have lightning strikes. That happens later on in the summer.
In particular, Ipson says, some fires start because Alaskans are getting their yards ready for the summer.
It's springtime, people are cleaning up, doing a little spring cleaning, and they're wanting to burn things like debris piles. And while it's okay to do that, but you need a burn permit to do that.
Ipson says simple precautions can avoid trouble. Don't burn during high winds and don't leave a fire unattended. For more information on fire safety and burn permits, you can visit the Alaska Division of Forestry website at forestry.alaska.gov. Some fires are already burning in Alaska. A wildfire charred 25 acres in Delta Junction yesterday. The Alaska Division of Forestry says state and local firefighters corralled the blaze, which raced through dry grass in breezy conditions yesterday afternoon. The origin of the fire was a three-week-old burn pile. Delta Area Fire Prevention Officer Gabe Pease Medrore says the property owner was on site and tried to suppress the flames. He says the fire got away despite previously burned ground surrounding the pile. Smoke from the fire forced the closure of Nistler Road for about half an hour. A fire crew out of Fairbanks arrived on scene later in the afternoon to mop up and search for hot spots. According to the Alaska Interagency Coordination Center, there have already been 55 fires so far this year. 16 of those are currently burning. The Juneau Fire Marshal's Office says it's still investigating a series of unexplained fires in the capital city last month. Meanwhile, local investigators got some unexpected help when a popular playground was destroyed by arson. KTOO's Matt Miller has more on the story.
In what could only be described as an ironic and tragic coincidence, the playground fire at Twin Lakes happened on the very first day of a statewide conference in Juneau of Alaska Fire and Arson Investigators. Juneau Fire Marshal Dan Jaeger organized the conference that drew 40 students from the North Slope Borough to Ketchikan. A half a dozen instructors from Alaska and the lower 48 conducted the five-day training session here in Juneau. After Jaeger finished investigating the April 24th fire at Twin Lakes, he says a few of the conference's participants came by to check out the scene and provide another set of eyes.
They weren't actively, taking notes. They were just mental notes and observations that they noticed. And the big thing was just kind of having as a peer review. This is what we're thinking. Does this make sense? And do you see the patterns that we're seeing?
Jaeger determined that two 13-year-old boys started the fire that ignited the rubber chip ground cover and eventually consumed the whole playground. Jaeger says a playground fire was just the latest in a string of five fires last month.
While it seems like it's unusual because we had especially the first four within 4 days, it's not necessarily meaning that it's unusual.
The first fire last month at the Art Such Photography Store was determined not to be intentional, but Jaeger says they're still investigating three other fires as intentionally set. So far, there does not appear to be a connection between all of the fires.
They were different parts of town, different times of the day and night. Typically, if there's going to be some sort of a connection, there's a common source of ignition, there's a common description of a person that people might have seen. There's a specific time frame usually.
After the Twin Lakes fire, Jaeger credits the community for quickly coming forward with information that helped his office and Juneau Police find the two boys responsible within hours.
I really can't emphasize enough the importance of the community's involvement because they see things from different points of view because obviously we can't be everywhere at once. And just different photos, it brings a different perspective and helps us.
Jaeger says fires usually come in waves. Spring and summer fires are usually started by unsupervised kids getting out of school and playing with fire. Winter fires are usually related to heating issues like misuse of heat tape for pipes, boiler or chimney problems, or a space heater igniting a blanket or some clothing. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, training for trouble, what it takes to become a police officer in Alaska.
My favorite maneuver that I've learned is it's called shrimping, where you basically just inch your way out.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Alaska's media landscape is undergoing some changes as an influential political website has announced it's shutting down. In a press release, the Board of Alaska Commons says they are ending the operation after a five-year run. The news comes less than 2 weeks after the site's managing editor, John Arano, said in a Facebook post he'd be retiring from the venture. The venture never found a way to make money, which is a large part of why the board decided to shut the site down. The closure comes not long after a shakeup at the Midnight Sun, a widely read blog that brought a conservative take to Alaska politics. The site's main author, Casey Reynolds, left to take a job with the ACLU of Alaska. Midnight Sun does intend to keep producing content with a new staffer, according to Reynolds. Teachers from around Southeast Alaska will gather in Juneau next month to discuss culturally responsive education. A conference called Our Cultural Landscape will focus on helping educators better teach Native students. Jackie Kukesh is Education Director for the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, which is organizing the event.
We think that teachers, when they understand, they begin to understand they're part of the cultural landscape here as well. And then they get grounded. And I think it provides a shift for educators to look at their relationship as a teacher in the classroom.
The conference is June 1st through the 3rd. It's open to teachers, administrators, classroom aides, and those working in early childhood education. Kukesh says the approach is to use more than is of use to more than Native students.
We feel it benefits all the students when you have a culturally responsive classroom and you have a culturally responsive teacher who is aware and knows, and we hope that that approach will engage kids.
Guest speakers include Christopher Blodgett, a Washington State University faculty member and clinical psychologist. He's known for developing a system to better understand and track childhood and family trauma. Retired Juneau teacher and principal Carmen Mastronardo Catas is part of the conference planning effort. She says educators need to know Native culture is not a thing of the past.
The culture isn't gone. It's still here. And so our hope is that teachers leave this conference with a better understanding of not only the local culture, but the art, the history, and how place-based education does increase student achievement, decreases dropout, and engages students because they feel connected.
The conference is an outgrowth of an intensive training program for Juneau teachers. It will be held at Juneau Douglas High School and the Heritage Institute's Walter Sobolev Building. For a teacher who loves nurturing confidence in students as much as he loves mathematics, being the first Alaskan to be inducted into the National Teachers Hall of Fame was the fitting cap on nearly 30 years of inspiring young people in Alaska and other parts of the world. Bob Williams grew up in Palmer, the son of a sawmill operator. He went to college to become a petroleum engineer. That was in the 1980s. When the price of oil tanked, jobs were scarce, and Williams joined the Peace Corps, where he found his love of teaching math in West Africa.
The Gambia, their official language is English, so I taught in English. But when I went back to the compound, it was Mandinka. And it was just a great experience, and it was challenging. I started with just all I had was basically a cement wall that was painted black and a box of chalk, and students wrote in notebooks, and I had up to, I think, 55 kids in a class. So it was challenging circumstances, but you know, that's where I started doing after school review sessions for students and helping them study for their O-level exams. And I found a love of teaching that has just never faded.
So how long were you in the Peace Corps, and then how did you get to the point where you could teach back here in the U.S.?
I taught in the Peace Corps in the Gambia for 2 years, and then I got a scholarship to Columbia University, a Peace Corps fellowship, where they were trying to attract Peace Corps teachers to come teach in New York City. And part of the conditions of that scholarship was to teach full-time in New York City public schools and half-time at Columbia University to get a master's degree in mathematics education. So I taught in New York City, Brownsville, Brooklyn, Harlem, and the Bronx for 2 years. And then I really missed Alaska. And so I came back and I taught in Nome, Alaska for 3 years. And then once I was married and my son was born, I had a lot of pressure from my parents to move closer to where they were. So I moved back to the Mat-Su Valley and have been a teacher there up until just this past January 27th, when I took a job with Alaska Department of Education with Commissioner Johnson, and I'm now the Director of Educator and School Excellence.
I have read that your teaching style has been somewhat unusual in the classroom, that there's dancing and cheering and math. Please talk a little about that.
I've always looked for ways to build excitement. And one of the things I tell everybody, and I do want students to be highly competitive and very competent in what they're doing, but I think probably some of the biggest and most meaningful breakthroughs I make with students is that I tell them all that I want them all to feel welcomed, valued, safe, and respected when they walk in the class, no matter who they are. And I work for that. And so I have some cheers that help, you know, the point slope form of the line is a very important formula that we use in Algebra 1, but it goes all the way. We use it an awful lot in calculus. So we have a math cheer that goes with that. The quotient rule dance in calculus. In geometry, we have Sokotoa cheers, all those kind of things. But if there's something where students have struggled with it, I try and have some cheering, dancing motions that go with that. And not every student is into cheering and dancing. So I try to be respectful and say, hey, can you at least stand up? Can you mumble a little bit, you know? And then I have other kids that they are completely into it.
Now you're at the Department of Education with the state. What's your level of concern about where we're going to be going with education in the next few years, especially?
I'd say in terms of concern, just like, you know, listening to districts and students and educators across the state, there's a high level of concern with where the level of funding is going to be and how much we're going to be investing in public education. What I can say, I mentioned I grew up the son of a logger out in the Mat-Su Valley. My dad's top salary was, I think, $26,000. And yet I was able to, because I had a quality public school education around me, I was encouraged to go to college and got a degree in petroleum engineering. So I think every problem we face in the state of Alaska, part of the solution is having a high-quality public education for all Alaska students.
Bob Williams is the first Alaskan to be inducted into the National Teachers Hall of Fame in Emporia, Kansas. Williams now works for the State Department of Education as the Director of Education and School Excellence. After a big haul Thursday, the Togiak herring purse seine fleet is closing in quickly on its quota. As of this morning's tally, the fleet had about 2,800 tons left to fish. Tim Sands is the area management biologist with the Department of Fish and Game.
They took 2,800 tons yesterday. I don't think there's quite enough capacity today for them to take another 28. So we'll give them all of today, and then tomorrow we'll look at it and see where we're at and give them a little bit of time tomorrow to get enough capacity to take the rest of the quota without taking too much more.
The season opened last Friday and has plugged along at about 2,000 tons harvested per day, which is right in line with the daily capacity of the four processors. There are close to a dozen gillnetters fishing herring now, but their catch has been small. So far, they have taken about 1,000 tons out of a quota of 7,000.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Alaska Pacific University offers graduate programs that deliver a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience with life-friendly schedules to support personal goals. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK, Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Troopers in Training. Twice a year, the Trooper Academy in Sitka gets a new class of recruits. Over a 15-week period, they go through everything from spelling tests to target practice. They also get close combat training. KCAW's Emily Russell visited the Trooper Academy to get a glimpse of how officers are trained to respond to physical violence.
Inside a room with red padded floors and blue padded walls, music blasts through the speakers. Enter a young guy in a gray t-shirt, blue pants, and sneakers. A black padded helmet covers most of his face.
So he's getting ready to start. So they videotape the whole thing. He introduces himself to the camera.
That's Lieutenant Chad Gaden. Gaden is the commander here at the Department of Public Safety Training Academy, known as the Trooper Academy. The guy in gray, he's one of the Academy's 35 recruits, and he's here for a fight.
There you go.
The recruit is wrestled to the ground by one of the instructors who wraps his legs around him. Finally, though, the recruit pulls himself away and gets up to his feet. Today's fight, it's just a test. Gaden and the other instructors, they're trying to see how recruits respond to a potential attacker.
When he got away from the attacker, he pulled out his gun. Is that that's what you're sort of...
Well, what we don't know is, what was that attacker saying to him?
From the sidelines, there's no way to know what the attacker said or did right before the fight. That makes it hard to assess whether the reaction was warranted or not. Gaden says the same is true with police videos recorded by the public.
The public only sees what is on the video, for example, and the problem with that is something unique must have happened before that in order for the person to take out their camera and start videoing in the first place, and we don't ever see that. We only see what happens after record is pressed.
To be clear, Gaden says it is the public's right to press record. He even says it's the officer's duty to protect that right. What this training does is it gives recruits options for how to respond.
My favorite maneuver that I've learned is it's called shrimping, where you basically just inch your way out.
Nikki Hines is a recruit from Fairbanks.
Your hips are a great tool. Just pop those hips and try to inch your way out.
Hines says she was nervous before going into today's fight.
Going into it, I was a little worried, especially being one of the smaller people, but it's been really fun. So I've enjoyed it.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'2".
You can tell Hines is happy here. But she knows she's getting into a dangerous line of work. Back in October, Sergeant Alan Brandt with the Fairbanks Police Department was shot on duty. He died a few days later due to complications.
After I found out about Sergeant Brandt, I thought to myself, I'm going to continue to pursue this, and I'm just going to believe in God's will.
Hines was hired by the Fairbanks Police Department. After she graduates in June, she'll move back there to start work. Others on that path to becoming officers and troopers, they're here in one of the Academy's common areas. They're sitting around on couches watching UFC fighting. They're getting pumped up for their own turn at a fight.
See, you've got bruises on you. This is a physical experience,
Yes, ma'am, it is. It's an excellent one.
Timothy Howell is a recruit from Anchorage. He's training to be a court service officer.
In my eyes, the court is the house of justice, and that is... In my eyes, that is extremely noble, and there's just something about the pursuit of justice and the application of the law that I like to see.
When I ask Howell what it's been like at the Trooper Academy, he smiles.
It has been phenomenal. It's been absolutely excellent. I'm really glad you asked, actually.
You hear this a lot at the Trooper Academy. The recruits, they want to be here. That's despite how the public's perception of the police has changed over the years with the rise of violent police videos. Howell and the other recruits, they know there are risks involved, and those risks begin in Sitka, in a padded training room where officers learn the physical side of law enforcement. Today's exercise, it's about judging what a reasonable amount of force is. That's the lesson Lieutenant Chad Gayden wants the recruits to learn and the public to understand.
There's no such thing as the least amount of force. What is less? If I tase you or I pepper spray you or I hit you with a baton or I punch you, which one of those is least? But they're all reasonable if the circumstances make it so.
And the recruits here, they're trying to plan for any and all circumstances, for the real world. After all, that's their duty. For AK, I'm Emily Russell.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Nina Lee in Anchorage. On Sunday, Lee will serve as UAA's Spring 2017 commencement speaker.
My parents are from South Korea. They work at a restaurant. So they work really, really hard. They work with their hands. They always make fun of me because, you know, well, my nails are usually always done. And when I ask my mom to, you know, get a manicure with me or something, she will always make a comment like, Nina, I can't do things like that. Like, I actually have to work with my hands. So it's kind of a running joke. My commencement speech is a tribute to my parents. They really supported me throughout my entire life and throughout my college journey. When I graduated high school, I moved to San Diego. I tried going to school there, did not do so hot. Came home in 2010. I tried going to UAA, didn't work out. I did that a couple times. One summer, one of my coworkers, she's a fourth grade teacher, and you know, I really look for things to do during the winter time. So I said, "Can I visit your classroom?" I had always kind of toyed around with the idea of being a teacher, but I didn't know what that meant. And I started working there, and it just snowballed after that. Teachers there were very encouraging. They told me I should, you know, apply for, you know, UAA again, re-enroll. So I started in the spring of 2015. I went spring, summer, fall, spring, summer, fall, and now I'm graduating this spring. My favorite part about being in elementary school is how funny the kids are. There is no one who will be honest with you except for a kid. A 6-year-old kid will give it to you straight. They're really honest. They don't know how to lie. They're amazing. And they're really funny. I mean, I could tell you stories for days about how I'm like just crying laughing over the things that they say.
Nina Lee lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Russell and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Matt Miller and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Vikram Patel in Anchorage, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.